when Boo-Boo's mother tried to go to him, they yelled at her to shut up and get on the ground. They held the family at gunpoint. They ordered Boo-Boo's father to the ground. They held him there. And then it was hours before these parents were able to see their child. So, again, tragedies like that don't happen every day, but the kinds of tactics and weapons that are being deployed by the police in the kinds of raids that we saw happen in Georgia are happening every day in America.
Kara Danska, we want to thank you very much for being with us. Senior counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union, author of the new report, The War Comes Home, The Excessive Militarization of American Policing. We'll link to it at democracynow.org. And that does it for our broadcast today. A fond farewell to Democracy Now! Video fellow Messiah Rhodes, who's worked with us for the past year. He just got back from Ferguson, Missouri, and it was wonderful to work with him in Staten Island as we covered the Eric Garner case and protests. Messiah, we wish you the very best. Your talent and promise is immeasurable. We're just looking forward to all that you do in the future. A very happy birthday to Hani Massoud. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Daniel Begun, Anna Ozbeck, Messiah Rhodes, and Sam Riddell. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira, engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Vesta Gadars. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website's democracynow.org.
KVU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor
Negative Land.
Performing live Friday, August 29th at the Crystal Ballroom, 1332 West Burnside in Portland.
We got so much power.
How many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
Since 1980, Negative Land has been creating records, CDs, video, fine arts, books, radio, and live performance using appropriated sounds, images, objects, and text.
Negative Land will be performing with Daniel Mensch and Cascadian Knights. All ages welcome.
It's not even funny.
Again, that's Negative Land. Friday, August 29th at the Crystal Ballroom, 1332 West Burnside in Portland.
More information can be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The loudspeaker spoke up and said, "Couldn't you add it, didn't you?"
KBOO Community Radio and Sante Aesthetics and Wellness are proud to co-sponsor A Touch of Portland 2014. The event takes place Sunday, September 7th, and is a great way to detox after a long summer. Whether you're getting back from Labor Day weekend or decompressing from the burn, this is a great way to stay healthy through dance, foods, and multiple healing modalities. That's A Touch of Portland, Sunday, September 7th at Northwest 17th and Davis. Go to kboo.fm/touchofportland for more information on this event.
KBOO Portland. The time is 5:03 p.m.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a federal judge strikes down restrictions to abortions in Texas.
Police in Tacoma use new technology to collect huge swaths of cell phone data from its residents.
And an expansion in the Oregon's food stamp program could boost the economy.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 29th, 2014. I'm Joey G.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. Today, a federal judge in Texas dismissed the state's new restrictions on abortions that would have forced dozens of clinics to close. Last year, Governor Rick Perry signed a far-reaching anti-abortion law requiring clinics to meet the same operating standards as hospitals. While supporters claimed this would protect women's health, critics said it would effectively push the clinics to close. The standards included air filtration systems and mandatory operating rooms. Critics estimate that the law would have dropped the number of clinics performing abortions in Texas from 19 to 7. They estimate that almost a million women would need to drive longer than 3 hours to get an abortion. U.S. District Judge Lee Yeakel agreed that this has presented major obstacles to women seeking an abortion. Another part of the law was upheld by the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court in New Orleans, which required doctors to have admitting privileges at local hospitals. This meant some Texas clinics had already stopped offering abortions. Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott will appeal the decision to the same court that upheld the law in the previous ruling.
Today, a federal judge accepted a settlement between the U.S. Department of Justice and the City of Portland on reforms to how the Portland Police Department treats mentally ill residents. U.S. District Court Judge Michael Simon set up annual progress reports for the city, with the first one scheduled for September 2015. 3 years ago, the DOJ launched an investigation and concluded that Portland police showed a pattern of excessive force while interacting with the mentally ill. As part of the settlement, the City of Portland will expand its mobile crisis units from one to one vehicle per precinct and institute a crisis intervention team. To increase accountability, the police department will complete investigations into officer misconduct claims within 180 days. While the settlement was agreed to prior to this week, the questions remain whether Judge Simon would require both sides to provide annual updates or accept an alternative proposal. Attorneys for the DOJ City and Police Union suggested that a compliance office community liaison be appointed to update the judge. However, community groups such as the Albina Ministerial Alliance objected. Today, Judge Simon agreed and will meet directly with both sides on an annual basis.
The police department in Tacoma, Washington, has been secretly employing controversial surveillance equipment since 2009. The program, known as Stingray, tricks cell phones into thinking that the device is a cell tower and pulls in their communications. This includes all calls, messages, and internet data. However, civil liberties advocates worry that Stingray devices indiscriminately attract information from every cell phone within a half-mile radius. The American Civil Liberties Union has likened Stingrays to a high-tech game of Marco Polo. The device sends out a signal, and the phone responds with its electronic serial number. Stingrays also can detect the direction and strength of the phone's signal, which allows for location tracking. The Tacoma Police Department claims that it must receive permission from a judge before using the system. In addition, Assistant Police Chief Kathy McAlpine said the department only keeps records of calls and messages, does not keep data. The Pierce County Prosecutor's Office and Public Defender's Office had no idea the Stingray program was in place. The Tacoma City Council voted for an extension of the program in March of last year with the stipulation that it would be used to find improvised explosive devices, or IEDs. IEDs are extremely rare in the United States and are more frequently used in open conflicts or wars. However, the police department acknowledged that it has used the Stingray over 200 times in the past 2 months. Nationwide, the ACLU identifies 43 police departments in 18 states that utilize Stingray devices.
Gerd Boyle, founder of Columbia Sportswear, has given the University of Oregon Health and Science University a $100 million donation. Last month, OHSU received the large gift anonymously, and Boyle revealed today on Facebook that she made the gift on behalf of her late sister, Hildegard LaFromm, a former university researcher with ties to the Knight Foundation. Last year, Nike co-founder Phil Knight promised to make a matching $500 million donation with the Knight Cancer Challenge. The university is now only $70 million away from reaching that goal.
If Oregon Measure 92 passes, GMO labeling will not significantly raise your grocery bills. This is contrary to what ads claim that are being paid for by biotech giants like Monsanto, Syngenta, and Dow Chemical, plus the Grocery Manufacturers Association. They cite a study claiming GMO labeling will cause family food prices to increase as much as $400 to $500 a year per family. Food prices are based on multiple factors, including costs for raw materials, production, transportation, advertising, brand competition, and retailers' competition. They're complex, making exact predictions impossible. But past experience shows no evidence that GMO labeling would increase prices. Lastly, there's also no evidence that GMO labeling increased food prices in the 64 countries that have adopted it, according to David Byrne, former European Commissioner for Health and Consumer Protection.
The federally funded Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program brings in about $1 billion to the Oregon economy. And if everyone who is eligible for the program applied, Oregon could see another $500 million added to the economy. Katie Furia, the SNAP Outreach Manager from Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon, says that every dollar that comes through SNAP generates $1.70 in economic activity. That translates into more business for grocery stores, farmers, and more work for the employees and the people who transport the food. Recent data shows that SNAP improves the lives of those participating. Seniors 65 and older show reduced rates of depression, and children do better in school. But only about 40% of seniors who are eligible are participating. Many seniors say they are afraid of taking benefits away from more needy people. But Furia says the federal program is designed to expand and contract as needed so that no one who is eligible will be denied. Furia points out that other barriers preventing seniors' access to food, such as not knowing about the program or realizing they are eligible. In an effort to increase senior enrollment, Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon formed the Older Oregonian Hunger Coalition with the help of the AARP. They've held a number of roundtable discussions around Oregon to help seniors increase their access to food.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is partly cloudy with a high of 76. Sunday we'll see similar temperatures. Today, in 1922, the first radio advertisement was broadcast on WEAF in New York City. And then on this day in 1966, the Beatles played their last concert at Candlestick Park in San Francisco. On August 29, 2005, storm winds from Hurricane Katrina broke 53 different levees protecting the city of New Orleans, submerging over 80% of the city in water. The quote of the day comes from author Paolo Freire, who said, "Washing one's hands of the conflict between the powerful and the powerless means to side with the powerful, not to be neutral."
It's 5:13 and time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
The good news is that it's not all bad news these days. Take the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. Please. That's a poverty wage, a shameful stain on our extremely rich nation. But don't count on Washington to lift our wage floor. Indeed, pig-headed Republican Congress critters obdurately refuse to consider it, even declaring there should be no wage floor to sustain America's middle-class framework. So where's the good news? Probably right where you live. Millions of low-wage workers themselves, from fast food workers to adjunct college professors, have been organizing and mobilizing, pushing local leaders to take action against the immoral inequality that's ripping our society apart and sinking our economy. Sure enough, local officials are responding. Seattle, Chicago, New York City, Austin, Providence, San Francisco, and even Oklahoma City, as well as other locales, either have raised their wage floors or are battling the corporate lobbyists to get the job done. And here's a pleasant surprise. Breaking away from the McDonald's, Domino, Taco Bell herd of low-wage exploiters, several smaller fast food chains are acting on their own, raising their starting pay levels as high as $15 an hour plus benefits. The Boloco Burrito chain in New England, for example, has raised its minimum to $9 an hour, plus subsidizing its employees' commuting costs and contributing to their 401k fund. A Boloco co-founder says, "If we're talking about building a business that's successful, but our employees can't go home and pay their bills, to me, that success is a farce." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Exactly. If you can't pay your workers a decent wage, then you don't have a legitimate business." The multi-million-dollar executives at poverty pay outfits like McDonald's aren't running a business. They're running a labor extortion racket.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
A report released on Thursday by the California Council on Science and Technology found limited scientific data to show that fracking and similar techniques are dangerous. The U.S. Bureau of Land Management announced that the results mean it can start leasing public land for fracking along California's Central Coast and San Joaquin Valley. The report found no evidence of water contamination from fracking in California. But the scientist directing the research, Jane Long, said researchers also had no data on the quality of water near fracking sites. However, the Center for Biological Diversity questioned the results. The report did find that half of the oil wells fracked in the state lie within 2,000 feet of the surface, close to aquifers. Hydraulic fracturing uses a high-pressure blend of water, sand, and chemicals to crack rocks containing oil or natural gas. Those cracks can sometimes extend as far up as 1,969 feet, not far from the surface. Fracking chemicals, some of them toxic, could migrate along the cracks and leach into drinking water, according to the report. There are no recorded cases of that happening in California, the authors note, but it remains a possibility needing further study.
The shooting of an unarmed black man, Michael Brown, in Ferguson, Missouri, has gained national attention in recent weeks. Today, the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination urged the United States to take steps towards curbing the excessive use of force by police. The news comes at the end of the month, that of August, a 30-day period in which at least three other unarmed black men have been killed by police around the country. John Crawford of Beaver Creek, Ohio, was carrying a BB gun inside of a Walmart when he was shot in the chest by police on August 5th. 6 days later, police instigated a stop of Ezell Ford in Los Angeles. The LAPD report claimed that Mr. Ford attempted to tackle the lead officer, which led to his shooting. However, witnesses and the victim's mother said that he was lying on the ground and complying with the officer's orders when he was shot in the back. The following day, August 12th, a resident in Victorville, California, called police to report a robbery suspect that had fled the scene on a bicycle. Police found Dante Parker nearby on a bicycle and said he was uncooperative. Officers tased him repeatedly before sending him to the hospital where he died while receiving treatment. And in the month of July, unarmed Eric Gardner was stopped by police in Staten Island for selling untaxed cigarettes. Reportedly, after he resisted handcuffs, an officer put Mr. Gardner in a chokehold and he died of neck compression.
And now we hear the latest in American Indian affairs from our friends at National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new poll asks people to weigh in on tribal casino plans in Kenosha, Wisconsin. The survey comes amid a new effort by another tribe to sink the project. Chuck Kornbach of Wisconsin Public Radio reports.
A Marquette University survey of 800 people found 49% want Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker to okay a plan by the Menominee and Seminole tribes to open a large gaming and entertainment complex at a former dog track about 60 miles north of Chicago. Only 35% of those polled oppose the project. Marquette poll director Charles Franklin says the percentage of supporters for the Kenosha Casino has been going up, especially in the city of Milwaukee, where the Forest County Potawatomi already operate a casino.
And so there has been, if you will, a solidification of support at 60% support in the whole Milwaukee media market, including the city.
Professor Franklin says the rest of Wisconsin remains pretty divided on the topic, and poll respondents in the Madison market, where the Ho-Chunk tribe has gaming facilities, are against allowing the Seminole-Menominee proposal. Governor Walker has said all of Wisconsin's tribes must back the Kenosha plan before he would do so. But Kenosha Casino Project spokesman Michael Bechtel says the poll numbers in Madison are not a deal stopper.
I wouldn't call it a bad sign. You know, you look at these things, you know, from a trend perspective, and you're always going to see some upward and downward movement.
The poll results come as the Forest County Potawatomi has stepped up its efforts to pressure Governor Walker to say no to the Menominee Seminole project by suspending the Potawatomi's gaming payments to the state of Wisconsin. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
A federal grand jury has indicted Oglala Sioux Tribal Officer Becky Sutherland for excessive use of force. As Charles Michael Ray reports, the charges come after cell phone video shows her tasering a man on the Pine Ridge Reservation.
The video, posted to YouTube, shows Officer Sutherland telling a man on the ground to get up and get into her patrol car. She repeatedly tasers the man, who remains down while bystanders shoot video and react.
It's gonna get you again. Come on.
Hurry
up! Get in the car before it gets you again. Hurry up!
Oh my gosh!
After the video hit YouTube, Sutherland was placed on administrative leave and then indicted for deprivation of rights under color of law and assault with a dangerous weapon. Frank Palmersheim is a professor of law at the University of South Dakota. He specializes in the area of Indian law. Palmersheim notes the increased availability of cell phone cameras and law enforcement's own cameras makes video evidence much more prevalent.
I think video will always be helpful to people who are carrying out their jobs responsibly from a law enforcement point of view, and video will be damaging to those members of the law enforcement community who are not carrying out their responsibilities.
The ability to videotape law enforcement is not new. The images of the Rodney King beating sparked the L.A. riots over 20 years ago. Palmersheim says citizens have the right to take a video of whatever is happening in front of them. He says a video of an alleged crime can be enough to indict, but he adds that the public should remember everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Sunday is the deadline for comments on the Federal Emergency Management Agency's draft Tribal Declaration Pilot Guidance. It describes how FEMA will process and evaluate requests from tribes. Last year, President Obama signed an act which included a provision to provide federally recognized tribes the option to request a presidential emergency or a major disaster declaration, independent of a state. FEMA is seeking to develop declaration procedures through tribal consultation. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Today, Egypt's Antiquities Minister Mamdou El-Damati announced that revenue from the country's major tourist sites has plummeted by 95% since 2011. In 2010, Egypt's revenue reached a high of $420 million. In 2014, that number went down to a little under $17.5 million. Mr. El-Damati attributes the lack of revenue to the country's political turmoil over the past 4 years. Affected areas include Egypt's famed pyramids and historic sites at Cairo, Luxor, Aswan, and the Red Sea. Similar 9.5 million tourists stayed in hotels in Egypt in 2013, similarly, and in comparison to almost 15 million in 2010. Hotel visitors in the area next to the tomb of Tutankhamun reached just 261 days this month. The lack of revenue has left the Antiquities Ministry unable to pay thousands of its workers.
Israeli military airstrikes are responsible for $40 million of damages to Gaza's mosques, cemeteries, and other religious sites, according to the Palestinian Economic Council for Development and Reconstruction. Before the ceasefire, the Israeli military, known as the IDF, completely razed 73 mosques across Gaza. Some were hundreds of years old. Before it was destroyed, the Al-Omari Mosque is believed to have stood on the same site since 647 AD. Parts of the mosque, the portico and the minaret, were known to have been at least 5,000 years old. More than one-third, about 200 of the mosques, were partially damaged, along with two churches and 10 cemeteries. The IDF has justified the attacks by claiming that Hamas militants were using them as outposts. Video footage released by the IDF showed at least one smuggling tunnel leading from a mosque into Israel. More than three times as many of Gaza's religious sites were destroyed in the 50-day assault than in the last deadly Israeli attack in 2008-2009. The conflict that started on July 8th ended with a ceasefire this Tuesday between Hamas, the leading power in Gaza, and Israel.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. President Barack Obama is including Milwaukee, Wisconsin on his Labor Day schedule. AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Liz Shuler will also make Labor Day stops in Wisconsin. Shuler will be at Madison's Labor Temple for the Wisconsin South Central Federation of Labor's Labor Day celebration. She told Workers Independent News that Wisconsin was ground zero for labor struggles in 2011 and remains an important labor hub today.
Wisconsin's a key state. The president coming to Wisconsin. Actually, I had made my plans before he decided to come to Wisconsin, and I'll be traveling not only to Milwaukee, but also to Madison and be meeting with activists and leaders, but also we're hosting a youth roundtable to tap into that energy and that excitement and enthusiasm with young workers. We have the governor's race once again before us and a tremendous candidate in Mary Burke. Our members are excited and ready to mobilize.
As working people, we pay our taxes, fulfilling our responsibilities so government can function and public services can be delivered. But increasingly, big corporations are dodging their taxes. A case in point is seven corporations that are keeping tens of billions of dollars in cash profits offshore, according to their own financial filings. As long as they don't bring those billions home to invest in American industry and jobs, they can dodge American taxes. Apple has $111.3 billion offshore. GE has $110 billion. Microsoft, $92.9 billion. Pfizer, $69 billion. Merck, $57.1 billion, IBM $52.3 billion, and Johnson & Johnson has $50.9 billion in profits offshore.
One black man said to me that this is not a racial thing, it's America against the police.
Dr. Robert Bruce Ware, a Southern Illinois University Edwardsville professor who witnessed the militarized police attacks on peaceful protesters in Ferguson, Missouri. Dr. Ware says the militarization of police and their sometimes wholesale assaults on citizens peacefully protesting is a huge problem in America. While acknowledging that some individuals use protests as opportunities to commit crimes and should be held accountable, Dr. Ware says his experience on the front lines in Ferguson is that a militarized police response often exacerbated the problem.
I saw no acts of violence, nor standing on the front line did I see acts of violence just before what turned out to be a very aggressive and relentless police attack on the crowd. We were told over a loudspeaker and to leave the area. 60 seconds or less later, there was a barrage of tear gas canisters.
Dr. Ware says the solution is for police and civilian authorities who control them to respect the First Amendment rights of the people and of the press.
When there's a protest situation, if the police will come in their ordinary cruisers, wearing their ordinary uniforms, and stand around with the protesters as if they're there to provide community protection, then I think there will be fewer problems. I think that's the solution.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Lisa Ling and Todd Hutchinson. The producer is Ryan Katz. Our engineer is Ian Gadberry. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so pick up a pen or something else to write with. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kitzhaber's number is 503-378-3111. And Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterland.
And coming up on your Labor Day Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Lisa Loving guest hosts More Talk Radio. She'll lead a discussion of how much money the average worker needs to keep out of poverty. Call in with your thoughts on the minimum wage. At 9 on the Old Mole Variety Hour, Nathan Schneider talks about who stole the 4-hour workday. Bill Resnick and Norm Diamond talk about the meaning of Labor Day, union organizing, and direct action versus union bureaucracy. And Joe Clement talks with Kathy Weeks about utopianism over the last 100 years. At 10, Air Cascadia is off. We'll hear an excerpt from a recent episode of Flashpoints featuring journalist Harvey Wasserman on a recent ruling against TEPCO, the company that runs the reactors at Fukushima. At 10:15 on Local Focus, host Barbara Bernstein